owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to American Warrior Radio. This is Ben Bueller Garcia. How should a modern society bear the burden of war? Our nation is built upon the principle of equal opportunity for all, but what about equal responsibility? Some nations, like Israel, spread the burden of war equally among their citizens. Every young man and woman is required to serve in the armed services for a certain period of time. In their society, it's a rite of passage from childhood to adulthood. Not so in the United States. Less than 1% of our total population serves in the armed forces. And considering that we've been engaged in the longest period of sustained conflict in our nation's history, that pressure has inordinately fallen upon fewer and fewer families. Consider the case of the Domé family. You've heard Scotty on this show. When Army Ranger Christopher Domé was killed in action, he was on his 14th deployment. He had 10 years of service. 14 deployments in 10 years. Gold Star families are the club no one wants to join. Department of Defense Directive 1315.15 was enacted into law in 1948, and it's designed to protect families from bearing too much of the cost of war, the highest cost of war, not guns and tanks, but human lives. Today, we're going to hear the story of one of those families told by their sole survivor. Welcome to American Warrior Radio, Bo Weiss.
Hey, Ben, thank you for having me. Good afternoon.
Well, or morning, or wherever we happen to be broadcasting.
Oh, I guess morning where you are.
Well, yeah, we're in lots of places, Bo. We're everywhere. We want to be nationwide. Yeah, Bo, I've seen several other interviews you've done, and clearly telling this story is still tough for you, even many years later. In preparing for today's show, I thought a lot about the closing scenes of We Were Soldiers. I don't know if you've seen that movie, but at the end, the journalist Joe Galloway tells Colonel Hal Moore he doesn't know how to tell the story of their battle there in the Ladrang Valley, and Colonel Moore chides him and says, "You have to, son. You have to tell the American people what my boys did here." I do. I kind of feel that way about you and your situation, your family situation, Bo.
That's, you know what? That's a great comparison. It's not an easy story to tell, but it was something pretty heavy on my heart. And we had a lot to say. We had a lot to say, and it was a long process. But I got the perfect co-author to help me through it, Tom Saleo. And there was moments where, you know, I had to step back. So. And he was, you know, just entirely, I mean, he held the pen 90% of the time or more, but of course, but, you know, that's where the real professionals shine is, you know, what you don't see when, you know, the guy says, "Hey, I got it. You know, I'll take all the interviews with the Green Berets and the SEALs and I'll reach back out to you when it's time for edits." And he did a phenomenal job.
Well, Bo, I'll tell you, I do take some comfort in the fact that you prepared for, you know, hitting the big time on American Warrior Radio by appearing on some of those other smaller, lesser-known shows like C-SPAN, Fox News, Today Show. So you feel good. You're ready to rock and roll.
I'm ready. I'm ready to go.
Well, and tell me a little bit about Tom, because how does that process – and I got to tell you, in all the time I've been doing this show, the responsiveness of Tom and your publisher was light speed. I mean, literally, Bo, I – saw your story on Twitter. I sent a message. Tom replied immediately within a minute. He put me in touch with your publisher, who then replied within 8 minutes. I mean, I've never booked a guest so fast before, so kudos to those two guys. Outstanding.
Yeah, Tom and Joe Rinaldi, they're fired up. The entire St. Martin's press crew has been absolutely amazing. Name after name, Joe Rinaldi, Tom, and Mark Resnick. I mean, it's just been a perfect crew to work with, and they understand that this is, of course, you know, pretty sensitive topic, multiple topics, and there's just been trying to support me and support the family, and, you know, the end status is just to preserve Jeremy and Ben's legacy, and they've been amazing to work with.
Ladies and gentlemen, the book is Three Wise Men. We're talking to Bo Weiss, and there's a kind of a twist in there we'll get to later in the show about the title, Bo. But how did you get – did the publisher assign you Tom, or how does that actually work?
No, well, Tom reached out to me about 2.5 years ago, and he's written multiple books, Fire in My Eyes and Brothers Forever about Travis Mannion and Brendan Looney, and as well as a Medal of Honor book for Captain Flo Groberg, 8 Seconds of Courage. And, you know, he told me that he was reached out to me through the Gold Star community and said that I, you know, would like, you know, I would like to help you if you'd be interested in preserving, you know, Jeremy and Ben's memory and writing a book for your brothers. You know, what do you think? And so, you know, we talked about it, and then he flew out to Oklahoma City and linked up with me, and our visions just kind of synced, you know, automatically. And then we, I turned a few old journal entries over to him for, you know, and he said, okay, well, this, you know, we kind of, they don't make up much of the book at all, probably less than 1%, but it just kind of gave us an idea as far as where we wanted to go. And then we reached out to several people, and then eventually we heard back from Mark Resnick, and I knew right away, you know, one of the first questions Mark asked was, Bo, do you have kids? And I texted Tom while we were on the conversation. I said, this is definitely our guy.
Huh.
And that was the very first question. So we've, like I said, we got the perfect crew to tell the story. And yeah, we've been working together ever since.
Bo, let's talk about the Wise brothers. I also have two brothers. The time between our ages is, or the distance between our ages is not quite as great as yours, but kind of the same lineup. I'm the youngest. You know, the oldest, my brother Mike, was really always the leader. He's been the most successful. My middle brother John was sort of the, I mean, in a lot of ways he reminds me of your brother Ben. And John did join the military. But I see parallels there. I mean, really, growing up, it was just your typical small-town childhood, right? BB guns and scuffles.
Yeah. There was a lot of music, and there was certainly a lot of, you know, later on, a little bit of scraps here and there, you know, the good, healthy family stuff. But Jeremy was always, you know, being so much older and bigger, he was always kind of mediator if things got, you know, out of hand a little bit too far, and he would put a stop to it. And there's one example in the book that you read. And but yeah, it was, you know, Jeremy used to describe it as very Leave It to Beaver, and it was very ideal, wholesome childhood for all four of us, my sister included.
Yeah, yes, your sister Heather, she's an important part of this story as well. We don't want to overlook that. Now Jeremy, oldest, gregarious, but he was also the instigator sometimes, right? He wasn't always just let's talk a little bit about Halloween candy, Bo.
He was the most mischievous. I sometimes think Jeremy got into trouble, not really for the candy or the prize, but just for the thrill of it. And he would usually drag me along. And 10 years younger, at one point in time, I could be easily manipulated into that stuff before I started to get, you know, really leery. And you know, okay, wait a minute, what are you up to? And I see that grin on your face. Something's up, you know. You know, Ben was the more independent. Mm-hmm. I learned caution from him, you know, when Jeremy's shenanigans were, you know, about to pop up. But yeah, I don't want to, you know, give too much away, but, you know, laundry chutes, when it's dark, they might as well be 100 feet long. You don't know when you're going to hit the bottom. But that was one of many. And we kind of, tried to sum up our childhood and as, you know, with some of the more, the larger shenanigans. But yeah.
Well, you know, Bo, look at it this way. It was you and your brother's first covert op.
Yeah, that's probably true. Well, one of them for sure. Yeah.
And I'm with you.
There would be many more. Yeah.
We don't want to give away too much. We want people to read the book. So we'll be kind of talking around it, but it really the what comes out of the story, not just the story, is what I really believe our listeners need to hear, Bo, and we appreciate you being here to share it with us. Let me just sort of plant a seed before we take the break. My middle brother, John, he was always sort of the adrenaline junkie. You know, firefighter, drove an ambulance, joined the military, went into OSI with the Air Force, which is the Office of Special Investigations. He did pararescue for a while. And I think that kind of being an adrenaline junkie, that's what drove him to excel at that level in the military.
Yeah.
And I'd be curious when we come back to, you know, if that was maybe kind of similar for your brother Jeremy. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Bo Weiss, just a very, very powerful book just released called Three Wise Men. Stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Bo Weiss. His book is The Three Wise Men. And I tell you, folks, the three wise brothers enlisted in the military. Jeremy became a Navy SEAL. Ben would go on to be a Green Beret. And Bo was a Marine. And of those three brothers, only one came home safely. And it's just a very compelling story. And Bo, we're very grateful to you to take the time to share it with our listeners today. I kind of left you with that question, comparing it to my middle brother, John, being an adrenaline junkie. Is that because I bring that up, Bo, because the path of the three brothers into the military was, particularly in Jeremy's case, was somewhat convoluted. I mean, he was in, he was out, he was going to medical school. And really, I'm guessing, Bo, the desires of the wise parents, your father was a physician, going into the military was not really ideally what they wanted for you boys, right?
Oh, no. I remember my dad making the statement at one point in time. He said, I'm going to have one doctor, by God. But, you know, it's life's what happens while you're busy making plans. And, you know, Jeremy said that he didn't enlist because of 9/11, but he was prepared. And as you read, you know, it was something that had always been on his heart and on his mind. I think that 9/11 was just what tipped him over, you know, the fence, so to speak.
Well, and really, I think there's a lot of great snippets and lessons in your book, Bo, and one of them that I took from Jeremy's story was just the idea of just pursuing your dreams. I mean, he was that close to becoming a physician, and he just, given the choice of becoming a doctor, becoming a Navy SEAL, he's like, you know, I don't want to look, which path do I not want to look back upon and regret? And
right.
The Navy SEAL was the path he chose.
Right. And, you know, and he said it, you know, many times, you know, afterwards, and we were all a little, you know, not frustrated, but, you know, Jeremy really, and, you know, it's just, you know, what threw him over. But as you alluded to, he was very, very much an adrenaline junkie, particularly behind the wheels of a vehicle. And he was just kind of in the book, we talk about His talent as a driver becomes discovered, and he went to offensive driving school and rally racing and all sorts of different driving schools and became one of the better drivers in his unit in that deployment.
Bo, you alluded to 9/11. All of us who were, well, not even adults, but who were thinking at that time can remember where we were when those attacks happened. You just happened to be, it's interesting to me that you were in a town of, called Hope, of all things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was in school when like a lot of, you know, guys my age were, and found out kind of in between classes, and then staring at the TV, thinking this was I was just in absolute disbelief and didn't think it was possible. And of course, the first thing that occurred to us, everyone's thoughts were with Ben, who had already enlisted, and he was in Fort Lewis with 2nd Infantry Division. And so I went, you know, straight to my dad's office after work, and, you know, the first man I met was his audiologist, and he was just, you know, and business partner of, you know, 40 years. And so just absolute disbelief and a gut check, and everyone was thinking, you know, not if Ben was going, of course, but when.
Mm-hmm. One of the other things I find, well, lots of stuff about your book, Three Wise Men, Bo, but really, to me, there was sort of many elements in there that were sort of the old Catch-22 storyline, and really the fog of war, and you allude to that several times in your book, the absolute chaos that all three of you experienced. You know, in your particular case, you know, you're on watch, and there's these guys digging a hole in the road up there, and you notify it, and goes up through the chain of command. And, I mean, literally, when that next truck or Humvee comes down the road, you told those guys, those engineers, hey, there's that might be an IED up there. And then they proceeded to drive right into it. And I just can't imagine how that makes you feel.
I remember, and I think it was probably, you know, maybe it's something I think about every day. I think, you know, did I not articulate something well? Was there something I could have done? But you know, it's maybe they just misjudged the distance, or And then, but you know, before the IED went off, I remember thinking maybe I got the distance right. Maybe they did, you know, go the appropriate amount of distance and they're safe, you know. You know, because I remember watching it at night, you know, through these basically fancy binoculars, and then in the daytime thinking that I'd misjudged the distance, you know. So, and then when it went off, it was just kind of devastation. But my combat experience was very minimal, especially in comparison to Jeremy and Ben's. There was a lot of times where I, you know, wanted to go and I was a little bit too eager and, you know, was probably, I wasn't making the best decisions. And, you know, my guys were looking out for me and they kept me in line, you know, Lolo and Green and Johnson just constantly, you know, one was always had their eyes on me, making sure that, you know, trying to keep me in check.
Bo, the other situation you alluded to in your book, you know, also Fog of War, your brother Jeremy's death, which was the, if I get this wrong, Al Balawi suicide bombing in Coast. You know, your Jeremy was a pretty sharp dude, a lot of experience, a lot of good people around him as well, and they were warning folks up and down the line, and it just didn't take. I mean, have you ever gotten an answer to why that happened? Why it was ignored, or
one of the things that I, it's, you know, when you're a family member of a grieving victim after the fact, it's very easy to point fingers. But one of the things I've thought about is, you know, they were part of the team that was, you know, getting information on, you know, Osama bin Laden, you know, the number one target in risk versus reward. When you have the possibility of the greatest reward, you know, what's the limit to risk? Nobody had ever been in that scenario before. And I think that, you know, I don't judge anybody and I don't have any hard feelings that, you know, I think one of the most frustrating things was I was at a phase where I pointed fingers, and it was because we couldn't get all the information, you know, and we talked about, you know, did the explosion happen in or out of the FOB? And in retrospect, I think the effort was just not to give any family member partial information or something that you're going to have to take back. And the guy who told Ben and I in Dover was the guy looked like an operator. He looked like somebody that, you know, I would have no problem going downrange with. And I could tell that, you know, I don't know how much that he knew, but I knew that he didn't want to make the mistake of giving us anything partial. So As the information did start to come back, and it was, you know, a good thing that it came back as a whole piece of information. We have everything. Here's what happened. And, you know, sure, you want to say you could have done this or you should have done this. Well, of course, we know that now. But, you know, back, you know, looking back, how are they to know? And, you know, I've gotten to a point where I am at peace with it, and it was potentially the greatest, you know, reward that we could have had to capture Zarqawi or bin Laden. So naturally you might have to take some risks. So we know now what not to do. It's a teacher teaching lesson for the Central Intelligence Agency, but there is no blame from the Wise family.
Well, and there again, to clarify, Jeremy at that time was a private contractor. He was no longer a SEAL, but he was working, was he working for the CIA or in conjunction with the CIA? I don't know what the proper terminology is there, but long story short is he did give his life, the first Wise brother to give his life in defense of our nation.
Yes, and he was one of the seven CIA officials that was killed on FOB Chapman, Coast Province, December 30th, 2009, as was exhaustively researched by Joby Warwick in his outstanding book, Triple Agent, which helped give myself and I'm sure many others a lot of closure. Then, of course, later on it would be depicted in the movie Zero Dark Thirty.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Bo Wise about just the incredible story of sacrifice and service of the Wise brothers. I mentioned nobody wants to be a member of the Gold Star Club, and this was the beginning of it for the Wise family, and it didn't get easier. And you'll hear more about that when we come back. Bo, I got to tell you, there's a lot of snippets in the book I mentioned that really struck me. I believe one of the greatest compliments that can be given to a man is when you just say, it's simple. You just say, you know what, he was a good man, and leave it at that. And I got to tell you, as the son of a Presbyterian minister, I really also appreciate your dad's words at Jeremy's memorial service when he said, "I raised three godly sons." That really, really touched me. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around. We'll be right back with more with Bo Weiss. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Bo Weiss, just a very, very compelling book, Three Wise Men, just released. Bo, it's hard for me not, it's such a great book and there's so much in it, it's hard for me not to get into, like you said, we don't want to give away the whole story on the air, but you talk about the fog of war and it wasn't always a bad thing. One of the things that in the book that did warm my heart was that a little fog of war story when you and after Jeremy was killed and the two brothers were called back to the U.S. for the memorial service, and you're standing there waiting to get your ticket, and there's this scruffy-looking operator in line before you and in front of you, and you bump into him, and then you realize, hey, I know that guy.
Yeah, yeah. And then I said, Ben, and yeah, I remember that very well, and I remember thinking on the way home, you know, what are the odds that I'm going to be able to see Ben. I had no word as if he had been notified. I didn't know if he was coming home at a separate time or you know, the Marine Corps, 1st Battalion, 3rd Marines was gracious enough to give me a second flight and the delay because we couldn't get him buried at Arlington. And eventually we gave up the fight and buried him close to home, long story short. So I was granted a second trip, even though the Marine Corps didn't have to. And so I didn't know if the Army would do the same thing for Ben. So, and then all just as you said, just literally physically bumping into him, said, "Oh, sorry, man," you know, Ben, you know, and then eventually, of course, we got to fly home together, which was, I think a comfort gift from God of, you know, bringing the brothers together so that we didn't have to endure another long trip from one hemisphere to the other. You know, by ourselves, and it certainly made a big difference emotionally and spiritually for me.
Sure. Well, I tell you, Bo, I long believe that things don't happen by coincidence. There is a plan, and they happen for a reason, and I'll just chalk that experience up to that. You're talking about Heather. Oh, we haven't talked about Heather, but your sister, you know, she really seems, I mean, I'm guessing, Bo, I mean, faith was a big part of your family. You were raised in it, and that seemed to be something that supported you all through this terrible time. And Heather, she just, boy, what a strong person.
Yeah, she is. If there is, you know, one of the siblings that has never ever faltered in her faith, it's definitely been Heather. And I sometimes I don't think Ben did either. At early ages, Jeremy and I had our moments, but you're right. You know, we grew up in a strong family of faith, and we were taught it from a young age. And more than, you know, just on the faith side of it, growing up, you know, my father was, as a younger man, was a Baptist dean in the church, and so very active. Grew up in Sunday school, all that stuff, and that was kind of our personal backdrop. Yeah, we didn't want to make it a religious book, but we also thought, you know, Tom and I both thought that it was important to just say who we are and where we come from, and that's definitely part, you know, the biggest part of our foundation.
Both you and your brothers had experiences, Bo, that are deeply disturbing. I mean, just the idea of a 13-year-old out there, sent out there, and in many cases forced to go out there and shoot at you. Mm-hmm. And to have to take a child's life. And but, you know, when Bo returned, both of you went back into combat, really understandably looking for revenge. But it was different now. And I, the fact that, you know, Ben in the Hemlin province after Jeremy's death, you know, he offered up a prayer. And he said, "Lord, you know, keep me safe, not for me, but for the people who care about me. What happened to Jeremy can never happen to my family again." And yeah. I know our prayers aren't always answered, Bo, but in this case, tell us about Ben's final mission.
Well, Ben certainly handled grief a lot better than I did. And then we thought that the contrast real quick was very important to the reader understanding, you know, behaving like a professional soul or a professional soldier means guarding your soul. And he fought relentlessly to do that. And his final deployment, he was in multiple different places, I think, but most importantly, Balkh province. And he was breaching a cave network that was in the side of this cliff face that was overlooking this village. And they were hunting down specific people, HVIs, and, or high-valued individuals. And the team on the ground was taking some harassing fire, as I understand, from this cave network. And it was Ben and others' jobs to clear out this cave network of bad people and these insurgents. And he came to this one cave and that he knew someone was inside, and he fragged the cave. And the grenade went off, and he started pying around. And unfortunately, the grenade did not kill the insurgent inside. And he fired a long burst, 8 to 10 rounds, knocking him down and then traveling south to north through the legs and groin. And they got him out and got fire on the cave and got Ben. Medevaced out as quickly as they could, and he fought for 6 days, despite taking up to what we think was 10 AK rounds, nearly point blank. And he was airlifted. I've had emails from medical professionals, both German and U.S., that have said we don't know how he survived the flight. But still, he pushed, and 6 days later, unfortunately, as much of a fighter he was, he succumbed to his wounds on January 15th, 2012 in Landstuhl, Germany.
Bo, I can't help but feel, you know, after Ben offered up that prayer, and now you and your family and your mom and dad and sisters and, you know, just this, this couldn't have happened again. Not again.
Yeah, we, there was... when the information came to me incrementally, and it came to all of us incrementally, and the reason being there was no after-action report because Ben's guys were still fighting. You know, you can't have the AAR until, you know, the guys are out of the fight. And it was a long, as I understand, it was a long knockdown drag-out for the Green Berets and the other guys on the ground. And then once they did and the information started coming back, that was when we started to realize that it was life-threatening. Really, while we were in transition from Washington to D.C. to I think Amsterdam and then to Germany or wherever we landed. So once we got there, that's when we got the full report. And Ben was almost 100% life support by that time after about 5 days. And because he had... developed a compartmental syndrome, in an effort to save his life, the legs were amputated up to the hip, and his body was bloated. And
let's leave it at that. Bo,
I'm sorry.
Have you? No, don't be sorry. By all means, sir. I tell you, have you heard Rodney Foster's song "Angel Flight," Bo?
No, I have not.
I would encourage you when you're in a good place to listen to it. We had Rodney on the show, and it's really about an angel flight. It's a song he was inspired to write when he met, I think it was Red River Six was the name of the flight, bringing home some fallen soldiers. And it's just very, very powerful stuff. And I appreciate the fact
look
that,
it up.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I appreciate the fact that the military allowed you to be the guardian, to be that angel that brought Ben's remains back home.
Yeah. And I had one of his Green Berets with me, thank God, and Shane, and then eventually Trevor, and then and I had the I hate to say honor, but humbling honor and daunting task of also guardian angel for 6 Marines that were killed in a helo accident in theater, and I was I don't want to say grateful that they asked me, but I would have being able to take them all home,
I tell you what, Bo, let's take a little early break here. Ladies and gentlemen, they say as long as we read their names, they're not forgotten. Jeremy Weiss, Ben Weiss, Captain Daniel Bartle, Captain Nathan McCone, Master Sergeant Travis Riddick, Corporal Jesse Stites, Corporal Kevin Reinhardt, Corporal Joseph Logan. Stick around, folks. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Bo Weiss. The three Weiss brothers went off to war, and only Bo survived. And we're telling that story, and I encourage you to get and read the book, Three Wise Men. It's really more, it's a great read, but really is a tribute to this family who sacrificed so much in this ongoing global war on terror. Bo, how you doing?
I'm all right, man.
You're all right?
Thanks for asking.
Okay, just checking in. This is tough for me to do it from this side of the microphone. I can't imagine what it's like for you. So you're bringing Ben's remains home. Your brother has already been buried. And, Bo, once again, Heather, and that's what I just love about your sister, Heather. She's kind of quietly carrying that burden. As I understand, she spoke at both memorial services.
She did. And I a testament to her strength too. And she's been one of those people that's always, you know, when she can, you know, she picks you up as she's getting herself up, and, you know, that's just a testament to her faith and character. And she's just always been that way since I was, for pretty much as long as I can remember.
Now, Bo, I never served, but so correct me if I'm wrong here, but maybe telling the commandant of the Marines to get stuffed is not the smartest career move?
No, it's not. when the commandant speaks and says, you know, hey, that's it. And you might disagree with, and of course I did at the time. And, you know, as far as, I didn't know, never really got full clarification on what the restrictions as far as, service was. The only thing I know for sure is trying to get back to the infantry in a Victor unit was as it would play out. I was finding, okay, that's not possible. And, you know, as a young man, you know, newly married, no kids at the time, I was very angry about it. On down the road, being a father myself and, you know, adopting two beautiful kids and having a beautiful family of my own, my wife and Zach and Sarah, and, you know, I get it. I understand. And I would hope that if, God forbid, something like that happened to my children, but somebody would step in and, you know, intervene, you know, for the sake of the family. And that's exactly what he did. I think that in retrospect, the decision that he made was a family decision, a human decision as a husband or a father. And it was the right one.
And of course, we're referring to the Department of Defense sole survivor designation that basically was thrust upon you right then and there on the tarmac and general words. General Amos's words to your mom directly, I want to quote them. He said, "Mrs. Weiss, you have my word. Bo is not going anywhere for a long, long time." And you alluded to, Bo, that was hard for you to hear. I'm guessing, you know, particularly, telling a Marine they can't go into combat, it's almost like a forced retirement of a major league pitcher and getting the news that, okay, you're done. You're either out or you're going down to the minor leagues. And how long did it take you to chew that over and to finally just say, okay, I mean, in essence, you never, did anybody ever tell you, Bo, okay, you're never going to sling a rifle in the sand anymore, or it just sort of became apparent over time?
It became apparent over time. And like I said, I heard things speaking to a monitor or recruiter, career counselor later on, as far as things that I couldn't do. And I tried various different avenues just to see if I could find a window or a back door to slip out of it. And every single one of them just kind of, you know, closed. But the saving grace was, you know, I was asked, do you want to stay? You know, do you want to stay in the Marines? When that was my number one fear when I heard it, I thought, you know, after losing Jeremy and Ben, I thought, wait a minute, am I losing my brotherhood too?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my Marines had carried me. My brothers had carried me through the losses of Jeremy and then eventually Ben. So that was my greatest concern, was losing that support network. The Marine Corps was my family now. I had reenlisted to SOI and you know, settled on a 20-year goal. I wanted to be a battalion gunner. I wanted to go to SOI and teach. I wanted to go to every facet of the infantry and get as much infantry knowledge as I can. But, you know, not being able to go to a Victor unit that, you know, doesn't exactly make you competitive.
Well, and that's a good point. And there's no – I was thinking about that, Bo. I mean, there's really – there's no – procedure that accounts for that, because you're right. I mean, that's got to put a big crimp in your promotion, your ability to get promoted.
It made it work for a while, and I stayed active until 2016 and was able to drop to the reserves. And, you know, if you're not going to shoot, carry bullets, you know what I mean? And so just being able to stay in the Marine Corps and stay in, or not in the infantry, but around the infantry and, you know, serve in whatever capacity I could, you know, this was kind of my lifeline probably for too long, because I wasn't talking to my wife. I wasn't talking to my family. And so journaling became that outlet for me where I could start to speak. And it kind of prepared me for years down the road when Tom would reach out to me and say, hey, let's write a book. I was like, okay, you know, if I can just talk to one guy, if I can just talk to Tom, you know, yeah, we can make this book work. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there was no playbook at all, and I was desperate to stay around Marines as much as I could.
Bo, let's explore that a little bit more, because I've had other, you know, particularly the special operators who've been on the show. I hearken back to Tom Satterley, who was Delta Force, and among other things, was involved in the Battle of Mogadishu, and he really struggled with what he called the loss of his tribe, not just the loss of his purpose, because that was his purpose. But also for a long time, he was sort of bouncing around, lost, because he didn't have his tribe anymore, his fellow Delta operator or military operator. I'm guessing there was a period you went through the same thing.
Yeah. And, you know, there's an old expression. There's only two branches of service, the Army and the Navy. The Air Force is a corporation, and the Marine Corps is a cult. And no one takes greater pride in that expression than Marines. We love our little family, and the thought of losing it was – absolute devastation, because Marines were the only, or, you know, occasionally when I could meet with Jeremy's guys or Ben's guys, but for the most part, it was Marines that were my lifeline. So the thought of losing it was like, how am I going to cope without Marines? How am I going to, you know, deal with the loss of two brothers now without my brotherhood?
You know, someday I want to introduce you to Scotty Domey, Bo. She the Gold Star mom of Ranger Christopher Domey, and she's told me something interesting. She says even though that 10 years of his life is a complete blank to her because of what he did and the way they operated, she now, the only place she feels comfortable is around other Rangers, you know, his comrades.
Yeah.
And I find that very, very touching. Now, your brothers, Jeremy and Ben, saved a lot of lives, but the last life they saved was yours.
Yeah, I was, as you know, we discussed, there was a period of time where I couldn't talk, and I was self-medicating and doing all of the wrong things, and, you know, not wanting to, you know, grieve, and I was hiding, you know, a lot of emotions, and I was hiding a lot of things from family members and guys that were just concerned about me. And and number one was, as you mentioned in the book, was my cousin Nathan and my cousin Jonathan. A Marine counter-intel Fallujah veteran and an F/A-18 pilot, and they would keep tabs on me through my wife or my mom, and Nathan would, you know, call and say, well, you know, what's Bo doing, and Amber would, you know, help out, and when I wouldn't talk, she would, and say, you know, we need to start taking some steps. But I was getting to a point where it was pretty low, even though I denied it to Nathan and to Jonathan and every other family member. My wife, of course, it's so difficult. I don't know why, to talk to a spouse, and, not anymore for me. And I'm making those steps, but yeah, you know, I'm a product of luck. A Green Beret, a friend of Ben's, you know, always says, seek help, get help, give help. And Kevin Flyke, actually, who's also mentioned in the book. And it's been the best thing that you can do is to pay it forward. You know, when somebody reaches out to you and picks you up and says, you're not going through this alone, brother, you know, you've got to pay it forward. And that's part of the most therapeutic process, I think.
Bo, do you see any other next generations of the Wises joining the military? I mean, what would you tell your nephews? You've got about 2 minutes left.
I would, you know, make sure that they go deliberately. You know, don't be half in or half out. I'd probably tell them to go to college first. Same thing that our father, you know, tried to say to me many times, and even though I was too stubborn to listen, but, you know, go with options. But if you want to go, do your research, do it right, and go deliberately. You know, don't go half in.
Yeah, the college route or medical school or West Point, that didn't work out very well for your dad with his three wise boys, huh?
Yeah, I did. We got a little bit too much of that stubborn, you know, gene in there. But it's what happens, you know. We're pretty hard-headed.
Ladies and gentlemen, please get the book, Three Wise Men. Bo, it's just been a joy talking to you. I have to wrap up with, in the close of the book, and this just really struck me. I teased people at the beginning of the show, and you said, many of you will see the title of this book and think the third wise man is me, but it's not. It's my dad.
Yes. My father was, you know, he was our teacher from an early age, and we owe so much to our parents, but, you know, the example that he showed as a rock and a solid of a faith, and always believing, you know, in the good in us, and always making sure that, you know, that we were keeping God first was, you know, the core of our foundation.
And Bo, one last thing, because I'm remiss, I made the same mistake as I was promoting your appearance. I said, well, it's a modern day Saving Private Ryan, but it's not. And I tell you, Bo, you what your response was, you know, you didn't want to be rescued, and it made me think of that Band of Brothers scene after the Battle of Bastogne, where the reporter asked the soldiers, hey, how do you feel about being rescued by Patton? And they said, we didn't need to be rescued. And you, I mean, if you had your druthers, you'd probably still be wearing the uniform, wouldn't you?
I undoubtedly would be, I think.
Bo Wise, thank you so much for your very courageous appearance on our show today, and best of luck to you, sir. And maybe we'll catch up again soon.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Ben. It's been an honor.
Of course. Ladies and gentlemen, you can find this podcast and others at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. Whatever your favorite podcast download is, Spotify, Pandora, wherever you find your podcasts, listen to ours. And please, please share these important messages. You heard it today, why it's so important we support these families. Until next time, all policies and procedures remain in place.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.